Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. This is indeed the broadcast for January the 10th in the year of our Lord, 2017. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. All right, without further ado, last hour, we discussed the pardon power of the president. And the reason we discussed that is because there's a question, probe of emails, or of Hillary's emails, to continue full throttle. And I'm saying I don't believe it. I don't think they'll hold Hillary accountable at all. Kirk Crosby thinks they will to some degree. And he thinks that even though the Republicans are going to try to create accountability, that, you know what, Barack Obama may just pardon Hillary right at the end. And we were talking about the Constitution. I was saying, hey, that's not the intent of the founders. The president shouldn't just be able to pardon anybody. If you read it carefully, you'll understand there's a different intent of the founders with this. So Kurt pulled it up and read it really quick, according to the Constitution. Now, by the way, Kurt, do you have that handy again real quick?
Yeah. The you know, when
so
you
let me,
go
let
to
me
Google
highlight
and,
the checks and balances ahead. As we do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you go to Google and you put in U.S. Constitution presidential pardon, this is what you get. So it says the president, there must be something here because there's some dots, but it says the president shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment, period. The power to pardon is one of the least limited granted to the president in the Constitution. So,
all right, you can look up the dots while I talk about this. So there's a caveat there about impeachment. That's where the checks and balances start to become brilliant. Let me give you an example. Number one, they've had 30 years to impeach Hillary on a variety of things or to hold her accountable. And they've done none of it. Okay? Secondly, what we could do now as Congress, if we really had the guts, is we could say, Barack, we know you're going to pardon your friend for political personal reasons. That's against what the founders' intent was. We're not going to let you do it. If you do that, we will create consequences for you. And number one, they could impeach Barack Obama. And you'd say, well, no, Sam, he'll pardon the second he leaves office, right before he leaves office. There's nothing to impeach him for. But you can hold the president accountable for high crimes and misdemeanors. And you could go to the Constitution and say, look, this is sedition against the United States. The president literally used his political powers to cover up for Hillary. He might have the authority to pardon Hillary, but we can hold the president or him accountable as a citizen. And so there's checks and balances and ways this could be resolved, Kurt. The founding fathers never intended for corrupt criminals to be in power for 30 years, to have these emails, come out and all this stuff, and then to have no accountability. That wasn't the intent of the founders, Kurt. And I'm pointing to the checks and balances sewn into that as my evidence.
One of the key things, at least for me, is that, remember when the, basically when we started this whole thing, it was pointed out, and it's been pointed out since, that the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, is only for a moral people. And, that's the key issue and problem we've got here.
Boy, are you right on that score. By the way, what do those dots mean, or what does it give anything else that clarifies here?
You know, I couldn't find any more right now, but they say it's in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. And, the bottom line is, I'm sure that, most would say, hey, well, that's up to judicial interpretation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I guess then the Congress would need to go back and clarify for judicial interpretation and manipulation, because the judges are all in bed with Hillary, too. It goes on and on.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you, at some point, if you say that the president could pardon anybody for any reason, that there's no accountability, then you know what? He could just pardon all of his corrupt friends at the end of every term, and, there are checks and balances, and there's ways to prevent this from happening. And we act like there's no way, is my whole point. By the way, Alan Phillips is a well-known attorney on vaccine rights, vaccinerights.com. His other website, pandemicresponseproject.com. He may want to weigh in on this as an attorney, and he may not. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year. A real pleasure to be here with you, as always.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family as well, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Very much appreciated. I don't have expertise in presidential pardon, but I would like to throw in one comment here that
sure.
Well, I think it's important to have exactly the conversation that you're having here. Strictly speaking, what the application and limits of presidential pardon are, in other words, the strict legal, proper legal interpretation of the words, is going to be found in legal precedent. And I just Googled those words in a legal precedent search service while you guys were talking, because I just wanted to get a feel for how active an area is this in terms of legal precedent. And there's a few hundred court cases out there at least referring to this idea of presidential pardon. So there is, I don't know how many of those cases would be relevant to this particular discussion without, you know, looking more closely, but it would be interesting to see what the actual legal limits are in terms of how have the courts, and in particular the U.S. Supreme Court, how has it interpreted those words in real-world situations?
Yeah, and here's my main point. The founders gave broad power here for a reason. I get that. At the same time, it never meant that you could create a class of people above the law and depend on presidential pardons to always dismiss your friends and your cohorts in illegal activities and crimes and putting a whole class of people above the law, a.k.a. the presidential pardon. That was never the intent of the founders. Whether you can legally justify it with manipulated cases before the courts or not, that was never the intent of the founders. We didn't believe in a king. We didn't believe in unlimited power. So, you know, we've got to be careful when we start to debate issues without understanding the intent of the founders.
I think it's really interesting, the question as to whether or not Barack will pardon Hillary, because it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If he doesn't, then she's vulnerable. If he does, he's essentially admitting that she violated some laws and needs protection from it. So I don't have an opinion, you know, or guess what's going to happen one way or the other. But I guess if I had to guess, I would lean in the direction of they really have to take the all or nothing kind of position here. I don't really see any middle ground to save face or whatever. So I tend to lean in the direction of I don't think he will. I think he'll rely on the power of the corrupt system in place to maintain the protection that she's had so far. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I adamantly believe that we should strive, we as a nation and the officials involved should strive to deal with these issues in a strict nobody is above the law sense. And, of course, that would mean prosecutions, and, boy, those could go on for some time, given all
But it would also mean transparency and accountability, too. In other words, we've got to get to the bottom of it. I'm not saying just toss Hillary in the clink. I'm saying she deserves due process, as does everyone else.
Right. But the problem here, Sam, and this is where maybe I'm getting a little bit into the realm of opinion, although I think there's some substantial body of evidence supporting it. We're not talking about one rogue person here. We're talking about somebody who is part of a deeply entrenched system of corruption that involves who knows how many people and what specific people. But it's the risk here, and this supports the idea that I think Obama can't pardon her, because admitting, on the other hand, or he would have to unless he's convinced that the system can hold itself together, that the system of corruption at the top. Because if one person goes down, there's going to be a domino effect, and or certainly a great risk of that, because no one person has been violating laws in isolation. It's part of a network. And so if one person goes down, it's going to lead to others, to lead to others, lead to others, and so forth. And the whole system is going to be subject to exposure. Of course, that's what needs to happen, but they're not going to go down without a fight. So it's going to be very interesting, very interesting. I don't think, I'm not sure that anybody really has a clear idea of what anybody else can do or should do.
You know? Yeah, and I don't know, you know, how this would fall out, if he did or he didn't, or what the repercussions would be. All I'm telling you is the founding fathers intended for there to not be absolute power, for there to be checks and balances for the protection of the people. And if Barack does do that, I think we could go after him personally. Whether Congress has the stomach for it or not is another discussion. But you could go after the president and say, look, your final act as president, you know, is, you know, paramount to treason and or high crimes and misdemeanors at the least. And we're not going to let you use your presidential pardons to, you know, ignore the rule of law here. There's a reason for it. I don't know. Time will tell. I hope Kurt's right in that there's accountability and they really do dig into this hard. And I hope Kurt's wrong when he says that Barack will just pardon her and get her off the hook. Anyway, time will tell for sure. Quick pause in seconds. Alan Phillips on your radio.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare. The war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
I worry about my parents because I think smoking is going to harm them. I mean, it harms my mom. She coughs all the time. I'm just like, Mom, it's because of your smoking. But she's like, well, see, this is what you should look at. See me, I smoke, and look at this. I'm just like, yeah, Mom, why don't you just try to quit?
Sometimes teenagers do know what they're talking about.
I've tried. I've brought them the little pamphlets that we get at school about not smoking, and I've, like, tossed it in front of them. I'm like, Mom, read this. We even got this thing from the American Cancer Society. It was this thing that you send around about not smoking, because my mom sends those things out. And she's like, it's in here folding them up. And I was like, Mom, are you really going to send those out? And she's like, well, yeah. And I was like, isn't that a slight bit hypocritical? She says, no, I'm going to send them out. I was like, well, don't you see something? These people are trying so hard to get people not to smoke. She was just like, well, I know it's wrong, and I know it's going to harm me, but it hasn't harmed me yet.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Phillips, vaccinerights.com, riding shotgun, Kurt Crosby and Sam Bushman in the roundtable. I want to make one thing abundantly clear talking about this Hillary Clinton email probe. And I'm saying that, hey, you know what, Barack or Hillary or none of these people were meant to be above the law, and it's a perversion of the presidential pardon to allow hardened criminals to always have an escape hatch for their criminal activity, putting a whole group of citizens above the law. I maintain those statements and stand by them. However, I want to make one thing abundantly clear so there's no misunderstanding. Do not manipulate my words. Just because I'm convinced of that, that does not mean that I support any violation of the law. Hillary Clinton is innocent until proven guilty, number one. Number two, you know what? Hillary Clinton, according to the law, has a due process that we must follow. And if she is found guilty, then prosecution to the fullest extent of the law is what I stand for. But I am convinced we got to have due process, even for people who we disagree with, people we don't like, people we think are criminals, we whatever. There is due process and innocence until proven guilty. That's the American way, folks, and we better support that. That's the same reason that I don't support secession. It's the same reason that I don't support revolution. I stand for a restoration of the republic. I stand for peaceful advocation of principles. And I use education with a goal of appropriating change in America. Change back to the principles that made America great. Change where the system may have issues or is weak. Change in a positive way to restore the moral nation that I believe we are worthy of as Americans. And I support that educational opportunity, and that's why we're on the radio. Okay, I believe that the new media is going to change the game. No more gatekeeping, no more political corruption at the highest levels. We the people don't seek for power, we seek to pull it down. And we seek to have the proper role of limited government based on the rule of law. I want to make that very clear, because if you hear us, you know, talk about some of this and you take something out of context, it could be really manipulated into this idea that we're radicals, that we don't care about the rule of law, or that we don't, you know, as long as it's our enemies, we're willing to jettison principles. None of that is accurate or acceptable. And I just want to make that very, very crystal clear. Because there's a lot of people that say a lot of things and a lot of people that are advocating for a lot of things, which I just can't go along with, folks. We've got to maintain the moral high ground. I say it one more time. We have got to maintain the moral high ground and be true to principle. All right, there's an iconic tree in the news, Kurt.
Well, yeah, Sam, back in the 1880s in California, they had this one whopper redwood tree, and they literally cut the hole in that thing in the bottom so you could drive through it. And as far as I know, you did that.
Yeah, as a little
you know,
kid,
you
did
didn't
that.
Cut
this.
The hole, but
no,
you
no.
drove through it.
Well, I didn't really drive either.
With your
kid.
Family,
yeah.
You know, yeah, you know. And now nobody can do that anymore. But they say that basically that thing in the Big Trees State Park, well, that tree went down this last Sunday, shattered on impact. And now I guess the once majestic sequoia is now a heap of rubble. I would say that, man, all that rubble could be sold in little tiny pieces probably in, you know, for big money. But anyway, that's what's going on in California, Sam.
Yeah, and I guess a big storm is what brought that, you know, big
yeah.
old tree down. And
some yeah, they had some
they
winds
like
at 170 miles
care.
An hour. Yeah, good
did,
point.
Did you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people felt like it was a member of their family, and people were just all in tears. And I think it's a sad day for sure, because what
right.
an icon. But I will say that that's the way of all the earth, right, Kurt?
Mm-hmm. And we commented earlier talking about this thing that back in the 1880s, man, you could cut a hole in a big old redwood tree. And today, man, you better protect that tree. Of course, back in the 1880s, you protected babies, but now, you know, a baby can
yeah, they're like, save the trees, kill
the
babies
tree
now.
Has got to, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's all
right, now you were saying, though, you were giving out some numbers, Kurt.
Well, let's see. What number was I giving out? I was trying to figure out anyway. Don't remember.
All right, we'll let Alan Phillips chime in while you find
Oh, yeah,
you
could sell all
number.
Those little pieces. You could sell all those little pieces, or do you mean you want that apple story?
Oh, all right. Let Alan Phillips chime in. What do you think about the tree, sir? It's big yeah. news today, my friend.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. But like you
there
say,
you,
you know, I mean, all things must pass, to quote George Harrison, and it's, you know, we're in a world transition, but it's heartbreaking.
I think it is. It's a sad tale. I'd love to take my children through that tree. And I'd love
yeah.
to, you know,
yeah.
and but I'm just saying it is the way of all the earth. People die, you know, everything dies. It's part of God's plan, and I'm okay with his plan.
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. Apple news, Kurt.
Yeah, that's right. This was under the Drudge section called Great Again. And the headline reads, Apple seeks to expand manufacturing in Arizona? I guess amid pressure, they say, to build products at home Apple is seeking to conduct high-tech manufacturing at one of America's, its plants right here in America. Huh. I mean, imagine that. But anyway, so maybe that'll be
happening. What do you think of that, Alan?
Can they do that? Are they allowed to do that?
Well, that's what the real question is right now, is the regulations and everything else. Can it be profitable? And there's too much regulations. I think they're counting on Donald Trump to change a lot of that.
Well, he has. I'm amazed at what this guy has done just in his pre-inauguration period here. You know, he's gotten lots of people to talk about either not going out of the country or staying here. And I expect we'll hear about that in his inauguration address. You know, we'll hear something, I hope to anyway. But it's like this guy isn't waiting until he's actually in the Oval Office. He's, you know, kicking butt now. And at least that's the impression I get from the information I'm seeing, that he's getting lots of jobs going already. If that is indeed the case and he, you know, keeps that momentum going, this is going to be a real interesting term.
Yeah, our prayers are with him, and we hope he does well. No doubt about that. Kurt, I think that there's a lot of regulations that are making this very difficult, though. We're going to have to back off on government regulations if we want this to be successful.
Well, yeah, you mean so that then we could just employ those Arizonians without paying them any money and stuff like that.
No,
probably want to just have, oh.
Just let supply and demand and a free market work. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. You mean like freedom?
Yeah. All the government needs to do is make sure contracts are honored and make sure there's a level playing field. In other words, fair, understandable, clear rules, and let the market rip, if you ask me.
Man. Oh, man. America great again. Wow.
Yeah.
What a thought.
Now, Rex Tillerson's in the news, Kurt.
Well, that's right. Big Rex, now maybe you don't know who he is, but he's the guy that was the big shot at Exxon. Now he's getting ready to cruise in as Secretary of State. They say he's going to get a signing bonus from Exxon. Now, I'm trying to figure out how that works, but they say in this piece, says Exxon Mobil CEO Rex Tillerson will have to surrender more than 2 million shares of his oil company if he's confirmed as Secretary of State under Donald Trump, and the losses would be cushioned somewhat, they say, by the $180 million retirement package he's going to receive.
There's always a bailout, you know, for the big boys, isn't there?
So maybe it'll be all right. I mean, you know, he's
poor old
for
Rex
a
taking a
check
massive
somewhere,
pay cut,
you know,
to be patriotic and stuff.
You know, I mean, it's so, I don't know what his pay
not just said
will
how much
be,
you'd
but
get.
$180 million for his retirement package.
Yeah,
but I thought it was interesting. At the end of the story, you know, they do mention that Obama kind of, or maybe this is another story, but Obama used to make $60,000 a year as a community organizer. He's been doing better than that lately.
Yeah, ever since he got in government, his pay, you know, just started rising and rising. Poor old Rex. You know, attorneys like Alan Phillips get paid a lot, but compared to Rex Tillerson, I think old Alan Phillips is probably in the poorhouse. All right, Liberty Roundtable live in seconds.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. Owing to their concern over standing military establishments, the framers of the Constitution limited congressional budget authorizations for the Army to 2 years apiece, while delegating to that body the power to maintain a Navy. This was because the founders understood that a Navy would be useful in defending the Republic from foreign threats and protecting citizens pursuing commercial interests overseas. Since World War II, Washington has consistently maintained the largest and most active Navy in history. In recent decades, it has been increasingly used for power projection and involvement in foreign military conflicts not plausibly connected to the defense of the country. Although Donald Trump has repeatedly called for a less interventionist foreign policy, he has likewise demanded that the Navy be expanded. As a result, notes the Associated Press, the Navy is proposing the biggest shipbuilding boom since the end of the Cold War to meet threats from a resurgent Russia and saber-rattling China. The service has outlined a 355-ship program that is even larger than what the president-elect had promoted on the campaign trail, which would include a new aircraft carrier, 16 large surface warships, 18 attack submarines, and additional amphibious assault ships, expeditionary transfer docks, and support ships. The new gusher of military funding would be directed at congressional districts in Virginia, Maine, Mississippi, Rhode Island, and other states. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to libertynewsdaily.com. For libertynewsdaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, Kurt Crosby, Sam Bushman, Alan Phillips, VaccineRights.com on your radio. Well-known attorney. I was just teasing when I said he's in the poorhouse, but man, compared to Rex Tillerson, I think everybody's in the poorhouse. $180 million to retire so he can go work for government. It's like, man, you know, how would that be? There's a bizarre story I want to get to. Then we'll get to some vaccine stories with Alan Phillips. But first, Kurt, you got an interesting, bizarre story about marriage, huh? This thing's weird as can
be. A bizarre story about marriage. Yeah. Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to remember which one that
man,
is.
Man, poor Kurt, there's memory. A few. I got to get this guy some memory herbs or something.
Well, I'm just saying there's a lot of things in the news. But,
about marriage?
Let's see.
That you sent me? There's really one.
I try
and it
to
has
remember.
To do with marrying yourself, Kurt. There's a big old trend
Of
folks marrying themselves.
That is really bizarre.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know, I guess they've got this thing going on in other places where you can get a do-it-yourself marriage kit for $50. It's on the website called I Married Me. You know, so you get a sterling silver ring, ceremony instructions, vows, and 24 affirmation cards to remind you of your votes over time. Or you can go up to the $230 pack where you get a 14 karat gold ring. That's at imarriedmeiguess.com. So anyway, it's a whole new world out there, huh, Alan Phillips?
Well, I tell you, if it gets you the marriage deduction on your taxes, why not, you know?
Nothing like taking advantage of the tax code.
That's right.
All right. It's just beyond imagination. Now, when we first got into the news business, almost 25 years ago, Alan Phillips, we've been at it for a long time. And we started out, one of our first stories I remember when we got on the air was about people could marry their TV. And this guy literally married his TV and exchanged rings with his TV and stuff like that. And he put the ring on the knob of the, you know, one of the knobs of the TV. And then on himself and all this kind of stuff. So this stuff isn't really new, but it's just strange as all get out, right? I mean, it's just, it's hard to understand these things. But hey, what do you expect, you know? I guess you can't drive through the tree for your honeymoon, though. So, you know, it's all going downhill from there. But it does show that, you know, hey, we've become a very selfish society. And that's really the tragic in this. They talk about in the article, Judeo-Christian viewpoints, is marriage between a man and a woman to become one flesh and to create something greater than themselves and to focus instead of internally on selfishness, to be rather selfless and turn out towards children, to society around you, and acts of love and kindness and service, etc. And we've simply lost that to a great degree in America today. And it's
They mentioned how the Good Housekeeping magazine used to be what they call a woman's publication that, you know, decades ago was devoted to sharing useful tips for middle-class housewives. Now it talks about this whole thing of this growing movement of people who want to marry themselves. So, you know, we've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, and what I find fascinating is, I mean, the housekeeping magazine of yesteryear was certainly misogynistic, right, Alan? Talking to housewives about all their chores and such.
Okay. Well, to some extent, of course, this is, you know, reflecting an evolving society, but I'm not sure. Self-marriage, I'm just sort of, you have me totally perplexed with that as a concept, you know. But
hey, there's many concepts in our modern society that leave us all perplexed, my friend.
Yeah, indeed.
It's just like, are you kidding me? However, Donald Trump is about to, along with the Congress, jettison Obamacare, is what they call it. Now, I think it's congressional care because it could have never been funded and passed into law without Congress. Nevertheless, they blame it all on Barack Obama, and they're about to overturn Obamacare. The question for you, Alan Phillips, on a vaccine point of view, if we overturn Obamacare, we might get more freedom in our rights to have pro-choice when it comes to vaccines, huh?
Well, it's really interesting. There is some reference to vaccines in the Affordable Care Act. Among other things, there is language talking about grants going out to states for promoting the pharmaceutical vaccine agenda, essentially, that, not worded in that way, of course. But I hear from people now, and have been over very recent years, where they talk about getting unsolicited phone calls where somebody's conducting a CDC-sponsored or associated survey, and they want to ask you if your children are vaccinated and go into all kinds of information about that. That leaves the parents of unvaccinated children feeling very uncomfortable. How did they get my phone number? Why did they pick my phone number? Why, you know, this is the sort of thing, especially in today's world where it's such a controversial issue that people don't want to be public and outspoken, and they don't want somebody they don't know calling them and asking them questions about it. And if Obamacare got overturned and those grants went away, so would those phone calls. And I would see that as a very good thing, frankly.
Whenever I go to the doctor or go anywhere that has anything to do with medical at all, the HIPAA whips in, and I got to sign all these HIPAA forms and everything else. And what about HIPAA with this stuff? How do they get around all that kind of stuff and literally get some database that say you're not immunized or you're this or that or you're exempt or you're – and they're somehow – in my opinion, it would be a violation of HIPAA to some degree, wouldn't it?
This is a question that comes up a lot, especially with healthcare workers, where they're required to get flu shots at work to keep their job, and then they have to wear a mask, or somebody sends the memo around, here are the ones who still haven't gotten their flu shot, and everybody's screaming HIPAA violation. And I'm not an expert on HIPAA, but I have looked into it at least superficially. And HIPAA, first of all, it protects private medical records, but it doesn't protect every piece of medical information. And like any other law, there's a whole list of exceptions. And there just are some things that are not covered by HIPAA that people's first impression on sort of a common sense level, oh, this is a medical fact about me that should be protected by HIPAA. But I can speak to the hospital situation more directly. When a hospital is requiring their employees to get a flu shot as a condition of employment, it's not a private personal medical record. It's a hospital administrative record. And that actually, as I understand it, is not protected by HIPAA. There are things that many people sort of common sense first reflex is, isn't this a HIPAA violation? There are things in the hospital context that probably aren't HIPAA violations, but probably are federal civil rights law violations as it concerns people who have religious-based objections to vaccines. So there definitely are lots of things that hospitals are doing with their flu vaccine policies and exemption policies many times that are stepping over legal lines. And then Sam, at this point, over the last 4 or so years, I probably have worked with between 400 and 500 healthcare workers around the country, and I've written dozens of letters to hospital administrators around the country as politely and professionally as I can, saying, sorry, guys, you can't do that. So everybody's kind of on all sides of the issue there, or trying to figure out what's going on and how it works. They're all kind of tripping over themselves, trying to get all this in place and get it together in a way that achieves their goals and to a lesser extent that also complies with the law. They seem to be less concerned about that last part. But there's a lot of confusion about this, and justifiably so, because certainly on a personal level, it's a violation. Somebody makes an unsolicited call, or somebody takes your vaccine status and shares it with other people without your permission. There's no question that on a personal level, there's a violation there. And anybody with any sort of general morality, common sense, ethical thinking is going to be careful about that kind of thing, whether or not it violates HIPAA or other laws. But the vaccine agenda is just incredibly aggressive, and to a very large extent, it always varies from situation to situation, but to a very large extent, it just rolls over anything that gets in its way, whether it's somebody's feelings, somebody's health and well-being, or in some cases, outright life, or laws and so forth. I mean, as we've talked about in the past, the pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in massive criminal behavior, and I've updated my information. Between 2001 and through 2016, there were 40 combined criminal civil fines with pharmaceutical companies greater than $100 million. And there have been criminal fines as high as $1 billion. So it's, do you think somebody who would engage in a $1 billion crime might lie, cheat, or steal somewhere to achieve their objective? Of course. You know, we're getting misinformation and disinformation all the time in order to further that agenda. And a phrase that was, at least for me, new, that I think encapsulates this kind of functioning in the business world, that aspect of it, is the phrase predatory capitalism. capitalism, you know, in principle, and you and I've had, you know, discussions and debates on this to at least a small degree, where I feel like capitalism in concept is wonderful, but in practice has some serious problems, at least the current version of it. And I think this phrase predatory capitalism kind of encapsulates the aspect of it that doesn't work. And the pharmaceutical industry exemplifies that well with the documented criminal and civil fines.
All right, quick pause. Alan Phillips in seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite News the Network's Refused to Use talk station, VaccineRights.com, and PandemicResponseProject.com, his websites.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today. Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, Alan Phillips with us. So sorry for the interruption, sir. So you were basically saying, you know, vaccines are in the Obamacare legislation. And a repeal of that might change that. Would it be for the better, you think?
I agree with the general principles you're talking about here, that there's we're over-regulated. We just need to get out of the way. And to a large extent, given the opportunity, the system will balance and adjust itself. There's certainly the basic underlying principles, and I think there probably does need to be a certain amount of regulation to facilitate that process, but not to the point where you get in the way of it. But there's a huge unknown here. I mean, Obamacare has been implemented, and there's lots of reasons that it's one big train wreck. But there are some people, I have personal friends who have coverage because of it. So there's going to be some major adjustment going on. I personally will benefit immensely by seeing it go away. I object adamantly to being told that I have to get health insurance. I think everybody should, you know, have the choice to decide that for themselves and their families if they have one, just on basic principle. And I personally believe that the Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of that was a political one and not really a correct legal one, but we don't need to get distracted into that for the moment. There's another thing, I'm jumping around here a lot, but there's another thing I think is really interesting. It's on an article recently in Natural News talking about Tom Price. Now, I don't know anything about Congressman Tom Price other than what little I've read in this article here, but he's a congressman in Georgia, he's an orthopedic surgeon, and he's Trump's pick for Secretary of Health and Human Services. And what this article points out is that Dr. Price is a member of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, which is a private physician organization here in America that has spoken out against mandatory immunizations and problems with immunizations in the past. And they are, according to the article, among a very small number of physician organizations that are not funded by the pharmaceutical industry. So they're free to speak their minds and the truth as they see it. And this has me very cautiously, but nevertheless, almost want to say excited here, because I don't know what Congressman Price's views personally are, but his affiliation with that particular organization to me is a very, very positive thing as it concerns healthcare generally, but vaccines in particular. And the title of the article says, "Look Who Grasps the Vaccine Autism Connection, Congressman Tom Price, President Trump's pick for Secretary of Health and Human Services." So I am cautiously but very otherwise optimistic about the possibility of having somebody heading up HHS who is not just a spokesperson for the pharmaceutical agenda as it pertains to vaccines. So that has me very intrigued and cautiously hopeful. We get rid of Obamacare. Some of the things in there that concern vaccines, of course, would go away with it, depending, of course, on whether they repeal the whole thing or whether they just swap it out for Obamacare Lite, as some people have said, just made some modifications. So we have to wait and see exactly what it is that happens. I think there's a really, really good chance we're going to see a shift, but I'm unclear as to whether that seems likely to be a complete repeal or modify or get rid of only some parts of it. We just have to kind of see how this thing plays out. My sort of general feeling is I'd like to see the whole thing go away and then start over. There certainly
are. And a lot of it might have to do with how we, the people, react and what we do, what pressure we apply, et cetera, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is another real interesting point. There was a study out of Princeton University several months ago, the conclusion of which was that the average person, individual person, has zero influence on federal policy, that it's all big money that drives that. And that is, of course, how we ended up with Obamacare in the first place. So I'm skeptical about our ability as individuals to influence government at the federal level, but I am adamant that we need to take all reasonable steps to have our voices heard. And when this happens in large numbers through any of a number of different organizational structures out there for that purpose, I think there's an increased chance, you know, that we have influence, they have an effect. And I have written to my own congressional representatives in the past and been invited to call and talk to one of the aides. And, you know, it's some of these people really are accessible, at least indirectly, through their aides. And nothing ventured, nothing gained. So at the same time that I'm saying I'm skeptical of our ability to influence policy at the federal level as compared to big money, I am also adamant that we need to take all reasonable steps to do that anyway. Hopefully, part of this drain the swamp theme, to the extent that it's successfully carried out, will clear out some of the big money influence or at least create openings for we the people to be running the government the way it was originally designed and intended for us to be doing. So let's, you know, all... it's not going to happen because one man gets into office and fixes everything for everybody. It's going to take all of us working together on all of this because the big money interests are not going to say, oh, darn, we lost, and then step aside. You know, the power structure that was in place is still in place, and Trump may be able to weaken it and loosen it some, but it's not a short-term fix, and it really is going to take all of us. People working from the top, hopefully, of course, but also the grassroots effort from the bottom, all of us. So we have to continue to be active, maybe even more active. And
amen to that. We can't think Trump's going to fix it all and go back into our hole, that's for sure. So the question is how fast will the GOP, Congress, repeal Obamacare? And believe it or not, there's a rogue group of senators now that are, Rand Paul's one of them, that are saying, we got to have a replacement on day one. We're simply not ready. Let's delay this. Rand Paul, quote, Obamacare should be replaced day one. And so GOP senators are wanting more time for Obamacare repeal and replacement rights the Hill. And so the debate really is, do you want to wait until we have a replacement? And or do you want to get rid of it and say, let's work on the replacement, but first let's get rid of it? And there's a debate about moral hazard either way you go. You know, if you wait to replace it, it could take forever and you'll never get it done. If you repeal it without a replacement, you could get the blame if things go wrong and it unwinds and a lot of people don't have insurance. The mainstream press will no doubt spin this unfairly big time. Kurt, what's your take? Do you think we ought to just abolish it and then work on the replacement? Or do you think you ought to have a replacement ready?
Well, to me, you replace it with nothing, you know, but I mean, because the government shouldn't be involved in it. I'm talking about all of health care, Medicare, you know,
oh,
Medicaid.
Yeah.
But I understand the principle that, hey, man, look where we are. And, you know, just like Alan brought up, you know, he's got friends of his that have that service or have health care because of that or whatever. I would simply say, look, you know, in my opinion, we should recognize the fact that government shouldn't be in it, that we should say, look, here's how we're going to get out of it, you know, and that would be the
Amen to
the
that.
Solution.
In other words, we don't want to crash the plane. We want to bring it down to a safe landing, and we have an obligation and promises and a goal to hurt the least amount of people and do our very best to create as painless of a transition as we can, no question. I personally think that Ron Paul, what, 20-plus year congressman, Kurt, already wrote a replacement, and it relies on the private sector. All it does is have government honor ensure the honoring of contracts, create a level playing field, and then turn to the private sector for solutions in this. I support the Ron Paul legislative efforts on this, but the Congress, that what bothers me about the Congress is they've had literally 8 years of Barack. They've had since, what, 2010 to say they're going to get rid of this, and they've voted like 40-plus times to get rid of it, but it's always failed, of course. It's passed in the House, failed in the Senate, or failed at the presidential pen. But why haven't they worked on something to get this done? Right now, to tell me you got to delay it because we don't have anything in place just tells me how negligent they really are and how they're really ignoring real solutions that are already put forward. There's two solutions that I know of. One, Ron Paul's legislative efforts. They've been around for a long time. They're put together by a physician, and they're very well founded and sound principles. But the other one is there's some Christian organizations that don't have health care, Kurt, but they have health share efforts. And a lot of these Christians are putting together plans that have had currently Obama exemptions, etc., Obamacare exemptions. They're working wonderfully. And so there's plenty of models to implement right away. We don't need to wait till March. We don't need to get the senators and the Republicans off the hook and go down. In my opinion, I stand against Rand Paul on this. They've had plenty of time to gear up to solve this, and they've absolutely twiddled their thumbs, talked tough, and now when reality hits, they're just flat-footed and not ready to play ball, Alan Phillips.
Well, doesn't it, at one level, doesn't this all boil down to it's a game of who has to pay for it? You know, we were all told, well, you can keep your coverage, your rates won't go up. Well, of course they went up because the poor, if they're going to get coverage, somebody's going to pay for it, and the rich didn't get rich by paying for anything. So it's going to fall in the middle class. And so that's, you know, this was all, as far as I'm concerned, just a big game for the politicians to try to look good for solving a problem. And it did solve a problem for some people. But at the expense of the only people who ultimately have the money that you can get from them to pay for it. And so we really need to be looking at, I think, that component of the game room when we say, what do you do? Which way do we go? Well, you know, let's talk about what the question really is. Who's going to pay for it? And let's address that in a more direct and open way. Because
amen to that. Transparency is one of the keys. Thanks so much, Alan Phillips, who had the last word on this. And thanks for diverging to a few other topics with us temporarily. I know I'm going to the inauguration of the president. We'll keep everybody updated on that. Kurt Cosby will be with me. But there are some topics that we've just got to discuss before the inauguration happens. And as things unfold, we'll get Alan Phillips' take on those as well. Thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you.
VaccineRights.com. This nation shall endure.